This is an ad by BetterHelp. BetterHelp recently surveyed over 16,000 people and found that while 75% of people believe it's wise to seek support, only 27% of Americans are in therapy, and people stay silent to avoid being judged. BetterHelp has over 10 years of experience matching you with the right therapist, because we're all better with help. Visit BetterHelp.com/stopthestigma for their first ever State of Stigma report, the latest in mental health research.
Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, wherever you're tuning in from. Welcome to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. I am very, very pleased that you are all here with me today. We have an amazing guest coming on shortly. We're going to have a very important conversation today. Not always a very comfortable one, but an important one. But first, of course, we have my blog post from a couple of years ago, just kind of taking these in order, and they somehow do seem to be very apropos. So let's get to it, because I really want to bring my guest on soon. So this week, our blog is entitled, "Even When We Achieve Success, We Must Still Do Our Inner Work." This world is very achievement-oriented. We are taught to set goals and do something big with our lives, like becoming a best-selling author or a movie star. Fame and fortune are so deeply prized that we forget things of value in the process of achieving them. It is not uncommon to meet people who have achieved some level of status and then stop growing. They may keep pursuing more money or more fame, yet they forget to keep honing their skills or trying something new. In the world of self-improvement, we might find someone who has become the top of their field. They have published books, sold out appearances, and made their fortune. And when we see them in a setting where they are not on stage, we may find they are still looking to be the center of attention or just stay with their group of close friends and never mingle. It can make you wonder, are they really doing their work? Just because we have achieved a level of success does not mean we still do not have our own challenges to face. All too often, we have heard the tale of someone who has achieved some success only to abuse or traumatize others with their own shadow. Success in the material world does not equal personal and spiritual development. We do not become enlightened by making millions of dollars, which is why it is important to deal with the shadow aspects of fame and fortune before we achieve them. For when we have dealt with our own triggers, masks, and traumas, only then can we be whole enough to hold the spotlight without it going to our ego. Of course, this is not true of everyone who achieves success. Many people who have struggled to make it continue to do their work as they become successful. The reminder of continuing to do our work, of going deeper with our own process, is one we cannot forget. For while we remain humble and know that we do not know everything, no matter how far we've come, we can continue to serve others in the greatest way possible. By achieving success and forgetting our lessons, we serve no one. Yet when our hearts are open and our intention remains to serve, we have truly learned our lessons. Until we come to another lesson to learn, and we keep learning, until the day we no longer breathe. And we keep learning. As we keep learning and growing, we continue to thrive. Not just in making money, but in enriching our soul. Are you continuing to do your own deep work? So I kind of wrote this blog post a couple of years ago. I don't remember exactly what was the incident. I have a feeling it was there was some movie star that was in the news, or some musician or someone who had gotten arrested or had done some horrendous things. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, this person has millions of dollars, they have fame and fortune, yet they're abusing people, they're doing this horrible stuff, they got themselves arrested. I'm like, what is going on here? And the thing is, it's not reserved to the entertainment industry. It's not reserved to the business world. I have seen spiritual teachers and coaches and people who are the top of their game in the personal development field treat other people like garbage. I've even experienced it myself. And to me, it was completely unfathomable how these people could still act like this, who supposedly know so much and have been so successful. Till I realized, you know, people just don't keep doing their work. That when we achieve a certain level of success, we kind of take it for granted. We take it easy on ourselves. And we stop paying attention to the lessons that life brings us every day. And even in the most sacred of traditions, you know, even in the monasteries, whether they're Catholic or Buddhist or in whatever religion, even there, you'll find people abusing their power and showing up in a way that their shadow is just spewing forth garbage all over the people around them. And for me, you know, sometimes I write my blog posts. They're just for me to, for reminders for myself, because I work with people, I help people, that I always have to keep doing my work, that keeping that little bit of humility, that there's always something more to learn, that there's always some way in which we can improve ourselves, that we're not perfect, that keeping that little bit of humility is so, so important, especially for those in the helping professions, especially for those people like myself who work with people, who people put their trust in. It's a reminder to me to hold that trust very sacredly, to honor that trust, and to do the best I can. Now look, are we human beings? Absolutely. Do we make mistakes? Do we fall down? Do we hurt people? Yeah, absolutely. It's all part of the human experience. I'm not saying we're robots and we've got to be absolutely perfect. But we also should not, you know, give ourselves a pass too easily. And that recognizing where we have some real work to do, that is important as well. I'll never forget that I saw this video many years ago by this gentleman by the name of Matt Kahn, who's an extremely heart-centered spiritual teacher. And he talked about how, you know, when you meet some of these spiritual teachers and they seem to have access to all this great information and all these amazing skills, yet their interpersonal activity and relationships is such a mess. You know, I've seen it I've seen it myself personally over and over again. It always confused me. And he said, well, the reason why is because their crown chakra is way open. So they're open to the messages of the universe. They're open to spirit. They're able to receive all these gifts. But their heart chakra, which is how we relate to people, isn't as open as their crown chakra. So there are issues here they need to work on. And suddenly it made so much sense to me because I've seen people, I've experienced that exact same phenomena. So to me, there's always more to learn. There's always the opportunity and the invitation to do better and to show up in a way that helps ourselves and helps others in a better way. So that's really what this blog post is all about. So I hope you liked it. The title again is Even When We Achieve Success, We Must Still Do Our Inner Work. And you can always find my blog post on my personally branded website at theconsciousconsultant.com. And of course, on the radio station's website at talkradio.nyc/blog. All right. And don't forget, if you do like my blog post, I have a whole book full of them called Everyday Awakening. Just take a look for it on Amazon or at all the major booksellers. All right. Now, it is my pleasure to welcome to the show speaker, blogger, and author, Dr. Carol Osborne. Dr. Osborne is a true pioneer in the conscious aging movement with over 35 best-selling books under her belt, appearances on Oprah and The Today Show, and decades of thought leadership. Carol brings a profound, uplifting perspective on growing older that you don't want to miss. Dr. Osborne will be talking about her newest book, Spiritual Aging, Weekly Reflections for Embracing Life, set to be released this December. Known for her soulful, empowering voice, she invites us to see aging not as decline, but as a powerful spiritual unfolding, a message that promises to inspire people of every age. She has also curated her work through Fierce with Age, the Archives of Boomer Wisdom, and founded the Saging International, a wonderful foundation. Carol has created spaces for people to reimagine what it means to live fully and fiercely as we grow older. Welcome to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Dr. Osborne.
Well, thank you so much. I'd just like to mention that my book is, it's 2 years of weekly readings. And it came out last December. So this coming December, it starts year two. But you can hop into the book anytime you want.
Yes, yes. And we'll have a link to the book in the show notes. So definitely check out the summary in the show notes after the show. But yes, Spiritual Aging, which is what we've entitled this episode. We'll want to get into it. But we just have a couple of minutes before our first break. So first, I want to ask, like, how did you even decide to focus on this topic of aging? It's not your kind of typical field of endeavor, is it?
Well, happily, I wasn't the first, but I wasn't finding what I needed in academia. I was going for my doctorate in life stage development at Vanderbilt University, and I did get my doctorate, but I went all the way through all the social sciences and never really found a good explanation of aging as anything more than an afterthought. You know, all of the great life stage theorists peak at 40s, 50s, and some of them like Piaget, you know, your character supposedly set when you're 6 years old. And so after I got my doctorate, I thought, who can tell me more about, you know, I don't feel like the rest of my life. I was 49 when I got it. So it was considered a late in life, which to me is so young, but, you know, it was a late in life doctorate, right?
Right.
And I slipped and slid back to where my heart has always been, and that is with the mystics. And that's where I found aging as a spiritual experience, a spiritual practice, Aging not as something to be forgotten about, but as a culmination. And it does go right back to your blog. I was very interested in listening to your blog because, you get old enough, you outgrow the nonsense that being successful means anything. It's something else entirely. And the older you get, the more you want to develop those qualities that have nothing to do with being paid or even approved of.
It's kind of one of the gifts of aging, they always say, is that you care less and less what other people think about you, so then you're more and more true to yourself.
Yeah, well, what other people think of me is none of my business.
I say that all the time. Ooh, we're going to get along famously, I can tell. We're going to take our first break. So when we come back, let's talk about what you've learned and how we can use aging as a spiritual practice. Okay, Carol?
Yep.
Wonderful. So everyone, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We do this every Thursday, 12 noon to 1 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on talkradio.nyc and all over social media. And we'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Carol Osborne, author of the book Spiritual Aging, in just a moment.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a high-achieving, growth-oriented leader? Are you interested in developing your authentic leadership while creating a healthy, inclusive workplace? Hi, I'm Dr. Mira Bronku, host of The Hard Skills on talkradio.nyc at 5 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays, where we discuss how leaders develop the hard skills needed to make a greater impact. We interview experts, have live coaching, and tackle these challenges. Listen to The Hard Skills on Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We're speaking this hour with Dr. Carol Osborne, author of the book Spiritual Aging. So, Carol, may I call you Carol?
Sure.
Great. You mentioned in the first segment how, you were looking for some information around aging from sort of development in the developmental psychological world, wasn't really finding it. And then you found it more from mystics and from ancient sages. Tell me about that. What did you first find and what intrigued you about it that it kept you going?
Wow. I guess I have spent enough time on meditation pillows and the like to know how hard it is to become detached from your ego, as you were talking about, to truly simplify your life, to become individuated from other people's opinions, to be courageous, all that. I mean, I have paid a lot of money in a lot of workshop settings to achieve something, and maybe my crown chakra is overflowing. I don't know. I have a lot of information, but when push came to shove, I couldn't quite get that last 10, 20%. I don't know. There's a sense that I have that we're not meant to peak at midlife at the height of external success and then only have to look forward to a slow, sad decline that we're dreading. And I do believe, I believe very much in evolution and in God, that if there is a later part in life where we're physically diminished or even mentally diminished, there still must be some purpose to living that life. I don't believe that we're just floundering around waiting to die. Right. And so I started to I've been reading mystics all my life. It's just that all of a sudden it all made sense. For instance, if you want to get over your sense of ego being the dominant force in your life, you know, how do I look? You know, how are people perceiving me? You know, who am I and all that? All you have to do is get old enough and look in the mirror. Yeah. You don't have to go sit on a meditation pillow.
Right, right.
You know, it's like aging is an organic teacher. It starts stripping away all of our masks. It starts stripping away our defenses and our tools and the resources that we use to defend ourselves from being willing to tell the truth about reality. And as long as you don't take refuge in drinking a lot, you know, drugging yourself, continuing to drive yourself as if you were still at midlife when you're not.
Yeah.
You know, there's lots of ways you can be addicted to busyness. You can be addicted to your kids. Yeah. I mean, there's any addiction, anything that takes you away from being able and willing to experience what it means to be fully alive. And aging will do that for you if you let it. And being fully alive is not just the good stuff. You know, you're talking about shadow. It's also the bad stuff. So, you know, hopefully you get to live long enough to live past your persona and have a more direct experience of life, including joy and including pain. Yeah. And that's a spiritual awakening. And it's very, I think it's very hard to get there before you're very old.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that because there is something to experiencing in life the sense that, there, as they say, there's more days behind you than there are in front of you.
Yeah, I've heard that.
You know, the sense that we are going back to what we came from before we were born, that imminent demise, that really, I think, brings us even more present if we allow it to. I've heard that a lot of ancient mystics, they would keep a human skull on their desk to remind them of death. And they would use death as one of their greatest tools to help them to honor the present moment, regardless of their age.
Yeah, well, first of all, my father's a physician, and he had a skull in the attic. And just when you said that, I remembered that that was my favorite possession of his. I would go up there and study this thing for hours, like the teeth kind of wiggled. But, you know, maybe I went into this training very young that I was so fascinated at the age of 4 or 6 or whatever, you know.
Wow.
But I had a mystical experience, and I had it during COVID. In the heart of COVID, when we were isolated and I wasn't seeing people, the only place I could really walk safely was a cemetery near my house. Oh. And so I spent a lot of time walking the cemetery. And I was one of the people that enjoyed the isolation of COVID. But even so, I felt like it was an opportunity to grow. And sometimes you have this feeling, it's like, why aren't I enlightened yet? You know, I put so much time in. And during COVID here, I was paying my dues and I was meditating and everything. You know, why aren't I enlightened yet? So I took this long walk, and I swear to God, my life pivoted like upside down, related to what you just said. I perceived. So here I am studying the arc of human development and happened to the point of getting my doctorate in it. So for many years, you know, we're born, what happens next, then we move into adolescence and then young adulthood, that, you know, the differing things that move us forward and all that. But I realized that none of them, they all started at birth and ended at death. And I had this apparition at that moment of what comes before we're born and what happens after we die. Oh. And that the lifespan the limitation and understanding that I felt in academia was that they didn't take that into consideration. So, you know, I am a mystical person, whether I'm quoting other people or just it's how I view the world, but I was able to articulate it. I felt that I had come from love and that the birth process is terrifying and that the first part of life is being pushed behind by fear. You know, where did it go? How do I get it back? Will this job help me? Will this spouse help me? Will having my child help me? We're just trying so hard to get it back, but it's really being driven by this sense of being pushed from behind by this sense of desperation that's just under the surface. It's like, maybe I'll never get it back, you know? And what happened to me at that day walking in the cemetery halfway through COVID is that I suddenly felt, well, yes, I think that push is real. But I, for the first time, felt in the far future, or not far future, just ahead of me, that same loving force calling me to it, embracing me and pulling me in. And that shift, I consider is the beginning of the aging process, which I personally think aging, spiritual aging is a high state. You know, so for me, it's like to get to the point of initiating spiritual aging, to admitting I'm growing old, and that I'm in a serious aging process that's going to end with death. It was the difference between living my life being pushed by fear versus feeling myself being called forth in a loving embrace to reunite with love.
Wow.
And that very much changes the experience of growing older if you feel that growing more and more powerful.
I'm curious, was there a particular place in the cemetery where that happened? Like, were you near a particular person's tombstone or by a tree or something? I'm just wondering if there was a certain energy you hit when that happened.
Wow. I can picture exactly where I was. It's a military cemetery. And so it's very, to me, it reminds me of a musical score. I mean, it's very rhythmic, you know, that every single tombstone looks exactly the same. And they're all in these lines, regimented lines. And the individuality of every tombstone is barely existent. You know, you just, who is it? And what's their story? And it just, that's not important. What's important is, and I've never, nobody's ever asked me that question. So this is kind of fun. Wow. I was on a pathway that was higher than this at the top of the cemetery. And so when I looked down, it was like the span of, it felt like almost like looking up in the stars, you know, it was like, there's a harmony to it, but it wasn't personal. And I don't know if that filtered in. But it's also true. I wasn't seeing people, you know, when you're in COVID isolation, it was a very impersonal period as well. And so it was more about feeling, wow. Well, I mean, this brings me to my second point. You know, it's like, and you were talking about this. That was a great start to what I'm talking about. Ram Dass talks about becoming a nobody. Many of the mystics talk about becoming a nobody. And that's really more of that was coming from. If it's not about how much my last book sold, you know, and if it's not how I was interacting with people every day who were like affirming, oh, you look good, or, you know, wow, tell me about your latest trip or whatever. If it's not that, and this is years into COVID, you know, a year and a half or two without that kind of level of affirmation, then who am I and what am I? And it's like the whoosh of the push of the past to be that thing left. And it's like, for me, there's two fundamentals to spiritual aging. The first is to accept reality as it is for what it can't help being. And the second is to know that you're beloved no matter what. And neither of those have anything to do with persona or mask.
But I'm still curious if you got an answer to that question you just said before. What are you if you're not all that other stuff?
Yeah. Well, ultimately, I think the only thing that matters to me now And increasingly so since that moment. That moment was maybe, when was COVID? 7, 8 years ago? Longer?
Anyway. 5 years ago.
Is that all? God.
Yeah, that's all.
It just we're in our next catastrophe, right?
Yeah.
When I feel that I'm home inside my this carnation, it's all about, to what degree I'm open to knowing that I'm beloved unconditionally. That there isn't, unconditionally is such a great word, because if you are doing anything to earn that love, you have conditions.
Right.
You know, if in your story about the famous people, how do they know they're loved unconditionally? Everybody's trying to get stuff from them all the time.
Right. Right.
You know, trying to be like them or whatever. It's like, to me, that when I speak, and maybe you the same way, when I look at my audience, the people that really get my message, they tend to have been through a brutal illness or divorce, or they're estranged from their kids. You know, something has broken their persona.
Yeah.
And left them shambles on the floor. And then they can begin, and there's a fullness to their life and to their, you see it in their eyes, even if they're sad, even if there's tears in their eyes, they're alive. I mean, to me, there's dead people and alive people, you know?
Yeah.
I want to be one of the living people. And sometimes I'm whining and, you know, but I'm pretty in touch with what's going on with me most of the time. And some of it is neurotic as heck, but I'm not masking very well anymore. And, you know, that's part of the thing about growing older. You know, people, if they find it harder and harder to maintain their masks.
Yes.
So that's why you get cranky old men and, you know, you get women that, you know, come out of nowhere and speak their minds, tell you, you know, which end is up. It's like you lose your filter.
Yeah.
Better or for worse.
Wonderful. All right. Well, listen, we need to take another break. When we come back, I'd love to talk about some of the challenges around aging and how taking a more spiritual approach of looking at aging as a spiritual practice can actually help with overcoming some of those challenges. Okay.
Yeah. Well, challenge me with what some of the challenges are, and I'll tell you what I think.
You got it. You got it. All right. So everyone, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. Our guest this hour is Carol Orsborn. I'm sorry.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Mispronounced your name before. Author of the book Spiritual Aging, Weekly Reflections for Embracing Life. And we'll be right back to learn how to embrace more of life.
Hey, everybody, it's Tommy D, the nonprofit sector connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host the program Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Hi, I'm Linda Marsanico. The A-Train to Sedona is a memoir about my journey to love and compassion. It's also the name of my new broadcast on Wednesdays at 12 noon. When we are spiritual, we embrace possibilities and ideas, which strengthen our mind, body, spirit, health, and wisdom. On the A-Train to Sedona broadcast, I plan to interview guests who embrace these expansive practices. Join us on Wednesdays at 12 noon on Talk Radio New York City.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Thank you.
So, Carol, I would love to talk about some of the challenges and how this can help us. And you asked me to come up with some challenges. So I think of my mom, because my mom lived to the ripe old age of 99 and a half.
Nice.
And I was really quite fortunate for a couple of many reasons, one of which she was cognitively with it until the end. Also, she moved close to my sister, and so my sister actually, you know, took care of her towards the end of her life. But I also saw how she outlived almost everybody of her generation. The relatives she was close to, her friends, she outlived them all. That can be kind of challenging for somebody, can't it?
Yeah. And you think about the grieving with every passage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, aging is not for sissies. It's just not. I think in order to age spiritually takes a radical leap of faith that it's all for something. And, you know, Tolstoy and hospice workers, almost everybody that's worked with people on at the point of death or written about them, as Tolstoy did in the death of even Ivan Ilyich, they all say the same thing. Like, there's this thing that happens at the moment of death of, aha, you know, it's like, even if up to the moment of death, they are struggling and holding on and not wanting to go and all that. There's this thing, all of a sudden, there's this relaxation that comes back over them. And people who've come back, been resuscitated, say the same thing. As Tolstoy puts it, it's as if all the baggage of life falls away and you are in direct embrace of a belovedness that is the greatest joy you can possibly imagine. And I began to ask myself, I also had my mother had a difficult death until the very end. And then I had a mystical experience in that the only reason I knew that she died is that the room started sparkling. Effervescent. I thought maybe I was going to pass out or something. It was the same feeling you do get, but just before you pass out, but I wasn't passing out. You know, there was like this sense of all the particles being infused with something more. And, you know, when you have experiences like that, you begin to ask yourself questions. And the question I asked myself was that I don't want to die the way my mother did, because she was lonely. She didn't feel like life was meaningful. She couldn't find a purpose anymore. She kept asking me if I would help her die. You know, I didn't want that for myself. And yet here I had this growing belief that there was like this ecstatic experience that's going to happen to you at the moment of death. And I asked myself, what can I do to have that experience earlier? You know, is it possible to live in that space earlier on? And that's where the mystics come in, because some mystics, genuine mystics, are living in that space. Right. And I wanted to live in that space. Yeah. And others of them were aspiring to live in that space and very good at recording their struggles with it. So that's, Ram Dass is one of my favorites. I love Ram Dass, because he's so honest about his struggles, you know, and he's trying to hold on to his midlife persona and how spirit kept calling to him and eventually took over more and more of him, but partly because he had a debilitating stroke.
Right, right.
So, you know, is there a way that we can merge with this, with what I call the promise of life's fulfillment before we die and before we have the stroke? You know, and maybe we have. I mean, maybe you've had your stroke and you haven't had that experience yet. I believe it's possible, wherever you are today, as happened to me in the cemetery, a one-day conversion experience where all of a sudden you get more curious than afraid. You get more excited about being a person, looking at life, even the things that you've been dreading and resisting, as some kind of mystery and some kind of adventure.
And You know, the thing I always find curious is that different cultures have very different attitudes towards aging. You know, my wife comes from China, from the East, and there, older people are not treated the same way that they're treated here. They're treated with a lot more respect and honor. And I'm curious, in researching and learning about spiritual aging, did you find any differences in culture and the contrast that you found helpful?
Yeah, well, America's the worst.
Yeah.
Let's just put absolutely. It, you know, our strength is our weakness, right? Our strength is being able to manifest power and materialism and muscle.
Yeah.
And our weakness is that the weak are defiled and, you know, dreaded.
Yeah.
So it's all part of a package. I encountered the life stages in the Hindu tradition as a really healthy model and found it really exciting when I discovered that they start out kind of the same as the Western models of life stage development. You know, you are born, you develop your skills, you get a career, you get educated, you start a family. But again, in the Western tradition, they get us to that point, and then the kids, you know, leave the nest and leave you empty, and we're dropped off a cliff. You know, this now what, yeah. Right? And in the Hindu tradition, they have like three or four more stages. So the stage that I really like and that I think I'm at, or at least approaching, is called forest dwellers, and that's people who leave their they were in the mainstream of their life in their big house full of children. They actually leave the cities, go out into nature, into the forest or whatever, maybe in community though. I mean, there may be other people there and they relate to each other, but they're living very alternatively and more inwardly. Mm-hmm. And they're not promoting themselves. They're not going back and, mm-hmm. you know, writing best-selling books or speaking or anything. They're there though. If the kids want to come out to the forest and seek them out, they do. So mm-hmm. I think I'm on the verge of that. I am. I'm just turning that page to that stage. But that's not even the last stage, because the last mm-hmm. stage is called the renunciate. And there you are living alone, pretty much like a hermit. And I'm thinking about your mother's story. You know, there are people that self choose to be in a hermetic kind of relationship with their inner life or with God or whatever, where all of the veil between the divine and their own consciousness gets very, very thin. And anybody, their children, the world, the daily news, whatever, becomes less and less important, and even disappears. So if you, I'm not saying you personally, but if a person has a fear of being alone at the end, and so many do, then the thing, if you want to face your fear, you start reading about the contemplative traditions and people who choose solitude and don't think of loneliness as punishment or failure. That's a very American way of looking at things. You know, Thomas Merton was really upset to the day he died, because all he wanted to do was be a solitude contemplative, able to pray to God. And his order kept calling him back to publish another book and go on a speaking tour. He died before, at a young age, relatively young age, before he ever got to ever got to his goal of just being one with God, you know?
So that kind of brings me to the next kind of challenge. We just have a couple of minutes before break, which is, you know, I think most people see the biggest challenge of getting older is the physical decline and the disease and the body not working anymore. So what can spiritual aging, how can spiritual aging help us to kind of deal with those kinds of challenges when suddenly this vehicle that we've been used to working a certain way our whole life doesn't work that way anymore?
Right. Well, we realize how invested we are in illusion. You know, any one of us at any point could have gotten run over or gotten a terrible disease. I think the secret to my career, really, to you know, you asked at the beginning, why did you start writing about this? I was talking about when I got my doctorate. I had breast cancer at the same time. I had breast cancer when I was 49, and got my doctorate a year later. So it all came as part of a package, you know, that turned to the mystic. For me, illness I see as metaphor and as ritual. And while I don't want a bad diagnosis, I see it as a teacher. And again, if your game is not to live forever, which you're never going to do anyway, which is the illusion part of it, if you're not going to live forever, then there's something else that is really going on for you, and that is the development of your soul. Mm-hmm. And having a serious illness is such a great teacher and contributor to your personal growth. If you're willing to look at it not as the enemy, and not as, see, I wrote a book when I had breast cancer called "Speak the Language of Healing." You know, all the metaphors about breast cancer were, you know, fight it, you know, it's trying to kill you, you got to kill the cells, you know, all that kind of stuff. It didn't appeal to me then. And I guess I was a prodigy because, I mean, the thing is that when you get breast cancer at 49, even a serious case, you have the hope of recovering. And I did.
Yeah.
But I'm 77 and I'm not going to recover from life. Yeah. I'm not. You know, it's like the positive thinking and the beat it kind of metaphors, they don't work anyway. But I already knew that when I was 49. So I've had a lot of years living with a lot of stuff since then. Mm. And I look at it as healing my soul, not as sickness of my body.
Mm. Yeah. The gentleman who started this network, Giorgio, was he became a Buddhist monk, but he was an acupuncturist. But he used to say, "We don't heal anybody of anything because we're all eventually going to die." So what?
That's it. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But that's why age is so. I mean, again, look in the mirror and see I'm not who I used to be.
Right.
You know, and it scares us because I can see my skull beneath my, you know, my dark skull. I can see. Remember, you know, when I was four, I was holding the skull, but I can see it in there now, and in my friends, I see it. Yeah. So, you know, it's like there's no more hiding, and it quickens things. But, you know, spirituality, it's not like a game in order to get happy today.
Right.
Spirituality really is about telling the truth, including embracing our mortality and to find the liberation in that. But it's not for everybody. You know, if you can take your last $10,000 and go on a cruise to Europe and, you know, die while you're climbing, you know, the Alps or something, you know, God bless you.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of, you know, not everybody is that good at hiding from the truth of what it means to be a human being.
Yeah.
And I think those people who can't hide are blessed. And those are the people I'm interested in talking with and being with. Mm. And frankly, I find everybody else a little boring.
Yeah. Good for you.
I'm not good at small talk anymore, if you haven't noticed.
Yes. I love it. Okay. We're going to take our last break of the show. When we come back, I do want to ask you at least one question around your book, Spiritual Aging. And I also want to ask you about Saging International, because that sounds like a fascinating organization. Okay. And we'll finish up the show. So everyone, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We've been speaking this hour with Dr. Carol Orsborn, author of the book Spiritual Aging, and we'll be right back to finish it all up.
Were you an essential worker during the pandemic? If you needed to learn stages of epilepsy, did you depend on advocates? Did you use new innovations to cope with mental and neurological issues? Maintaining high quality of life and keeping good mental health are what we all strive for. I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each week, top healthcare influencers, professionals, and innovators answer these questions and more. Stay tuned on Thursdays at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will continue to be Frank About Health with all of you.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant. And on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
So, Carol, your book, Spiritual Aging, who did you write it for? And like, what's the purpose behind the book? How does it help people?
Well, let me just show it to you so people know what we're talking about.
Yes.
Here it is. It's Spiritual Aging, Weekly Reflections for Embracing Life. It's a little book you can put on your bedstead, carry it in your purse. Well, I love the 12-step programs, and they all have these reading companions, you know, daily and weekly readers. And I've always felt there should be a 12-step program for aging, because we're addicted to youth, right? And all the principles in the 12-step programs about, you know, surrender, asking for forgiveness, making inventories and making amends and making peace with God, all that stuff, it all applies, you know. But I've been writing about spiritual aging since I got around the time I got my doctorate. So there have been like 5 or 6 books, and I wouldn't have written another one. However, I started dreaming, and during COVID, very rich period for me, I started not only recording my dreams and not only analyzing them, but drawing them.
Oh,
I really had fun. Just, I'm a cartoonist, if anything, you know, but you know, there would be the monster sitting on the mushroom, and I had so much fun. I really did. But it felt like every dream was teaching me something. And so what I did is, on a separate piece of not paper, because I was at my computer, but I would just record the meaning of the dream. All the imagery would drop away. So it would be something like, you don't need people's approval anymore because you've reached a point of your life when, you know, blah, blah, blah. And at a certain point, I had 1,000 dreams, and I thought, you know, and it was on a sort of a trajectory of learning. And I thought, I want to do something with these. What shall I do with them? And that's when I came up with the idea of weekly readings. And so I went through my 1,000 dreams, and I picked, let me see, there's 52 weeks in a year. So I picked 2 years worth. So, but then I also have a fifth week for the bonus years, you know, we have 5 weeks. So there's, you know, close to 200 readings, and they're on every subject, because, you know, what was going on in my psyche had to do with jealousy, insecurity. What does it mean to be a nobody? You know, why aren't I enlightened yet? I'm sick. What do I do? Somebody I love is sick. And I organized them, which took a lot of time, so that over a 2 year period, you're going to have a daily reading that's going to touch every topic that could possibly happen to you in aging, with an index in the back. So, you know, there's a lot of serendipity. So, you know, right now, at what week are we in? We're in the first week of May right now. The reading is about regret. And there's a lot to regret right now. Same as your blog, you know, it's like it's serendipity. Gee, it's really perfect. People are regretting like crazy. So you read that reading, but let's say you're dealing with jealousy, and that's not this week's reading. Go to the index and then look up jealousy and go to that date. Mm-hmm. So after this book, well, while it was being circulated, a lot of people were saying, this would really be fun to talk about with a group. So you may remember the women's movement of the 70s and also the men's movement of people just talking. And there was also nothing like that about aging. And so I went to Substack, and for every reading in the book, I did a study guide. And that's where saging comes in. Individuals subscribe to my Substack, and it's not surprisingly, it's Spiritual Aging at Substack. people were coming and doing it individually, journaling, using the study guides timed. They come out one a week with the book, but they were also finding each other. We have a chat function and people were finding out, oh, let's do it online, or I'm going to take this to my church, or I'm going to do this at my senior center. And then I landed a really, really big fish, because Saging International is the largest global organization dealing with conscious aging, but conscious aging is the bigger umbrella that includes spiritual aging. And it was founded by Reb Zalman Schachter Shalomi, who wrote a book called From Aging to Saging. And he was buddies with Ram Dass and the whole gang from the 60s, that whole consciousness movement gang. As I got older, started coming together and being part of this thing called Saging, which continues today. And it's a new generation of leadership. Those guys are gone. And then we who, you know, grew up imbibing on these people are ripening, right? And so they asked me to lead a year of reflection based on the book. And so I'm really excited. I lead it once a month, but people come from around the world and are in small groups. The group I lead is quite large, but they're in small groups led by facilitators that are trained by the Saging group, and to meet with the same group for a whole year, multiple times a month. So, you know, you don't have to age alone anymore. I would love to have seen your mother join one of these. And I do, I have people, you know, joining these from hospital beds and assisted living facilities. And it's really a different experience if you don't feel that you have to age alone.
If
you can share your experiences and be heard. And so, you know, I've got several thousand doing this. And
it's wonderful.
Wonderful.
Oh, I love that. You know, since you mentioned Ram Dass a couple of times and people from the 60s, so I just have to ask, because one topic I touch upon on my show quite often is psychedelics. And they've done a number of psychedelic studies for the end of life anxiety, helping people to get to a point where they're more at peace with, you know, especially people with terminal cancer and things like that. I'm curious your view of that.
I guess I should learn more. I really haven't thought much about it. I personally I don't like the idea of bad trips, you know, especially at the end. I'm doing it the old fashioned way, you know, meditation, journaling, dream analysis. I like to have control over my life. And that's the thing about aging and mortality that kicks our butts, isn't it?
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, I've just always felt since I was a kid, and you know, I was a voracious reader when I was younger of science fiction, and I've read all these science fiction books and some that expose you to crazy ideas like, you know, in the future we'll be able to live to 1,000 years old or something. And it just always appealed to me because I always felt like, okay, look, I don't have to live forever, but 100 years or even 70 to 80 years just doesn't seem like that long. Like I felt like if we could just extend it a bit to like 200, 300, 400 years, like then at least we'd find some real maturity in society, right?
Yeah, but I don't know. So at 77, I think as the aches and pains accumulate, I think 100 sounds about right. That's the other thing. I mean, our society, it's like, you know, how long is your lifespan? You know, it's like we're comparing lifespans as if having a longer lifespan is just another way of stroking your ego.
We
all live exactly the length of life we ought to be living, and one does not compare to another. And I'm a big believer in quality of life, and I also feel that we are here for a purpose, and once we've achieved that purpose, it's wonderful if God wants us to keep us hanging around for a while to enjoy, you know, to bask in it. But I also think there is something about that sense that I was talking about Tolstoy and the hospice people, that sense of completion. If you're kicking around long enough, you know, waiting for something better to come along, it's like maybe it's a blessing to get it, you know.
Well, Carol, unfortunately, we have to leave it there.
No, it's a terrible place to leave it there.
But I could talk with you for hours. It's been a pleasure having you on the show. And I love talking about these important topics that aren't necessarily talked about enough in polite company, as they say.
Well, now when you look at my last statement, you know why they're not talked about.
Though I do have to say what you said before about sort of the mystical experience when someone dies, I have a couple of friends who are death doulas, and they often talk about what a beautiful experience is when they help someone transition. If people want to learn more about you, or and we'll have the link to your book or about Saging International, where can they find you? How can they get in touch with you?
Great. The Central Repository is just my name, carolorsborn.com. And it's on the book title, I'm sure it's on your website, but just notice that Orsborn is spelled with a couple of R's in it.
Yeah, Orsborn, O-R-S-B-O-R-N.
Yeah.
Carol, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure having you on the show. If you make it to New York City, please let me know. I'd be happy to get together and take you out for a cup of coffee or something, okay?
Thank you very much. This
Absolutely.
Was lovely. Thanks, Sam. I'm glad we made it happen.
Yes, me too. And of course, thank you, my loyal listeners, for tuning in each week. Without you, there is no show. And don't forget, if you did miss any part of today's show, you can always catch the replay on talkradio.nyc and on all the major podcasting platforms. Thank you all for tuning in. We will talk to you all next week.
Were you an essential worker during the pandemic? If you needed to learn stages of epilepsy, did you depend on advocates? Did you use new innovations to cope with mental and neurological issues? Maintaining high quality of life and keeping good mental health are what we all strive for. I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each week, top healthcare influencers, professionals, and innovators answer these questions and more. Stay tuned on Thursdays at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will continue to be Frank About Health with all of you.
Hi, I'm Linda Marsanico. The A Train to Sedona is a memoir about my journey to love and compassion. It's also the name of my new broadcast on Wednesdays at 12 noon. When we are spiritual, we embrace possibilities and ideas, which strengthen our mind, body, spirit, health, and wisdom. On the A Train to Sedona broadcast, I plan to interview guests who embrace these expansive practices. Join us on Wednesdays at 12 noon on Talk Radio New York City.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the nonprofit sector connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant. And on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a high-achieving, growth-oriented leader? Are you interested in developing your authentic leadership while creating a healthy, inclusive workplace? Hi, I'm Dr. Mira Branku, host of The Hard Skills on talkradio.nyc at 5 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays, where we discuss how leaders develop the hard skills needed to make a greater impact. We interview experts, have live coaching, and tackle these challenges. Listen to The Hard Skills on Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
McCrispy strips are now at McDonald's. I hope you're ready for the most dippable chicken in McDonald's history. Dip it in all the sauces. Dip it in that hot sauce in your bag. Dip it in your McFlurry. Your dip is your business. McCrispy strips at McDonald's.